Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey, everybody, you're listening to the Work For It podcast on the Makery Network. I'm Brian House.
And I'm Ben Butler. And together we represent the two most important components of the maker world.
I work the steel.
And I work the wood.
And I'm Brian Cohn from B-Cone Knives. I'm a young maker, and I work both.
The show's primary focus is business in the workshop, and then we reach out to you on social media with a question every week.
We read your answers and then discuss them on the show.
Follow our show on any major podcast platform and on Instagram at workforit.podcast, or you can support us for as little as $1 a month on patreon.com/workforit. Let's get on with the show.
What? What's going on, everybody?
Hey, we're back. Back in the Work For It podcast.
Yeah, welcome back to the Work For It podcast right here on the Makery Podcasting Network.
Oh, yeah.
I guess it's Podcast Network, right? That's all that's on the Makery to date anyway. If you've not checked out the Makery podcast offerings in a while, give it a look.
There are so many great podcasts to go listen to. Holy cow.
So many. There's been an ebb and a flow that I've noticed. There are a few that did a couple episodes and sort of petered out, which is unfortunate. but there's still some just awesome content. Jeff Fader is killing it with his interviewing of different makers in the community, and it's, man, he digs so deep, but he does too deep. You know, like sometimes those interviews go like the guy's clearly trying to make the other person cry. And I don't feel like Jeff's ever trying to make anybody cry.
No, he's such a great interviewer. He just knows how to, you know, keep the conversation going, keep it light, but also get a lot of really interesting things out of the person that he's talking to. It's fantastic. Speaking of Jeff Fader, I had the opportunity to have a quick conversation with him.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, earlier this week, so I was just finishing up my last week's batch of knives, and I made a set for myself out of a couple different regular steels. So, like, I had two that were W2 and one that was 1075, 10... whatever, it's a 10 series steel. But anyways, I tried to do a forced patina on it with mustard, and it came out, it came out really icky. Like, it just was really disgusting looking, very blotchy. And I sent him a quick video. I just kind of did a little quick 1 minute, hey, thank you for all of your, you know, great content. You're a great guy. Hey, quick question, if you don't mind, what is your process for forced patina? Because this looks like shit. And, he basically just told me to shoot him my phone number, and he gave me a call, and I got to have a quick conversation. He shared his process with me, and you know, I said that I got off the phone quickly because, you know, I don't want to waste his time. He's a very busy guy, or he's a very busy guy. But realistically, it was because I was kind of starstruck and kind of get a little bit like I could tell I was about to start fumbling over my words. Right? And
funny. You know, I think that's like one of the least appreciated but potentially greatest things about Instagram, right? Is if you have a public Instagram account, you have a public phone number, basically. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, for sure.
You can reach out to anybody, just about anybody, right? And I think by default, I think this is still the case, but it's been a long while since I created my Instagram account. But I think Instagram, it's set by default to a public account. So you actually have to choose to make it private.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a ton of people that just end up leaving it public, you know? But I think about that a lot, you know, like if you want to collaborate with another maker or you want to reach out to Jimmy DiResta and, you know, tell him he's a knucklehead or, you know, whatever.
I mean, I wouldn't suggest to go in that route. I mean, this is how I got here is that I reached out to you to try to, you know, send a knife off to you. And we did this collaboration or we're working on this collaboration of the shop knife and.
100%.
One thing left to another, and here I am. Look at that.
Yeah. And I think, so to me, that's pretty powerful. I think Twitter was the first of the social media apps to do this, to say you can call anybody or you could message anybody, right? And I was definitely glad because I remembered that from Twitter. And when I moved to Instagram, I can remember thinking like, this is brilliant. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise it just gets elitist and you have to have this. Remember like Google had their little, wet fart social media network. That
I never really did Twitter. So I'm not really big on that platform.
I've never been huge on it either, but it was like, there are a few of those things. The other thing I really appreciated about Twitter. So I do a lot of geeky data work for my day job and, Twitter is very easy to mine for data. So,
well, that's kind of scary.
It is. Yeah. And so their API is very open, which means you can write pretty simplistic code to search for whatever the hell you want in the mass database of Twitter. I can't remember how many millions of tweets go through that stream like every minute, but it's insanity.
Yeah.
We actually wrote an app, so I work technically for a research station, mm-hmm. and I would say 30 to 40% of what I do is like true researchy research stuff. The other 60 to 70% is like actual wildland fire support. But so a few years ago now, we wrote an app that would mine Twitter for tweets about wildfires.
Okay.
And what we were trying to do is figure out, like, could we build an early warning system based on Twitter data in places because like California?
If Twitter gives you a location of where that was tweeted and there's a person that's tweeting, there's a wildfire outside, like that would be pretty, easy to create a map.
Yep.
With the public just throwing you that information in. That's really cool.
Yeah. It was really cool. And it still is. It's still running. Although the tech is getting a little old now. 3 years is getting old.
Right.
So this thing would go out and scour. We had all these keywords. You wouldn't believe the number of exclusion terms. So excluding data, the number of different phrases and terms we had to put in there to get mm-hmm. bed and sex references off of the, like I was like a fucking wildfire last night, baby.
Oh, jeez.
Just like,
well, isn't that the internet though?
Yeah, it's the internet. But yeah. Hey, anyway, we kind of just jumped right in here, but I'm going to back up for just 2 seconds because obviously there are just two B's on the 3B podcast today. Brian House, the butler has taken over the house. How's that?
Bum, bum, bum.
So Brian is out today. First of all, this is late and I want to apologize for that. We it is that time of year, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Everybody's just been like running ragged three sheets to the wind, just, you know, like hound dogs chasing, chasing projects and chasing money and everything else. But Brian's tied up with some business stuff that he could not get away from or out of. So here we are.
Yeah.
The second stream.
Yes, sir.
But yeah, so making it's been
it
good.
Making it work.
How about it? Yeah. It's been good. It's been one of the more interesting summers on record for me. But what's going on over in your neck of the woods, man?
Oh my gosh. So this week has been crazy for me. So obviously, I just talked about finishing up a batch of knives. So I was working hard on getting that batch finished. Had that brief conversation with Jeff Vader, which again, it doesn't even seem real. I don't know about you. I always get like, Whenever I have conversation with, I mean, before it was having conversation with you and Brian, and now, you know, speaking to just these high, you know, level people, I get like so much of that, like imposter syndrome. Do you have to deal with that as well? Is that just me?
I will tell you, I believe, and I now believe it pretty firmly, that imposter syndrome is the only thing preventing me from growth.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, no, I totally get it. That. 100%. In fact, it was 3 or 4 months ago. One day I happened to do stories for a change.
Mm-hmm.
And then I happened to also look at the analytics for the stories. So, you know, if you're watching your own story and you kind of swipe up, mm-hmm. then you can see how many people viewed each segment.
That's a fun fact I didn't know.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That sounds like something I should know by now.
I know. Well, it's not well known. So are you on a creator account or a business account? Or
I think I'm under a business account.
Okay. So each one gives you a little bit different analytics. So a business account will give you different analytics than a creator account. The other key thing about the difference between those two is that a business account has about a tenth of the music available in Reels.
Good to know.
So if you're wanting to take advantage of like all the cool hipster music in Reels, switch to a creator account.
For
and
sure.
That gives you more. Now,
yeah, I'll definitely look into that.
There used to be folks that would say, man, they switch every quarter, you know, because Instagram sometimes preferentially treats business accounts better I don't know. I've had my account at a creator for a while now. I switched it to a business and then I was like, why the frick can't I find any music? And then I read there's nothing available, But
anyways,
imposter syndrome is real.
For sure. But anyways, to continue on with my week update. So this past weekend, I had a cousin get married. So my brother was up from Nashville, who I haven't seen since Christmas. So that was really nice to spend some time with him. He brought up the knives I made for him. So it's kind of cool to see how they've been, progressing. He works in Nashville, basically pretty much as high up of the food industry as you can get. He was working for the Predators, like making all of the Nashville Predators meals.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Actually, like when they were going to playoffs, they had a bunch of people get COVID. So what was normally like a 20-person team was like a 7-person team.
No shit.
So he was working like 80, 90 hour weeks cooking. So it's really cool to see my knives hold up to that level of work.
Heck
day
yeah,
in, day
that's
out.
Yeah.
For
true.
Literally months, he was pretty much going balls to the wall on that, which was obviously he worked incredibly hard. That's what he loves, but it's also kind of a cool thing. Like, oh wow, they actually held up really well.
That's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, because you'll never get that level of testing, right?
Yeah.
Most people don't unless you know. Like you say, a chef that is in it to win it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And actually, now that he's done cooking for the Predators, obviously their season's done. He just started at the Golf Club of Tennessee, which is like the highest end golf club in all of Tennessee. It's like top 10 in America or something. To get on the wait list of the golf club in Tennessee is $50,000.
Yep.
Or no,
man. Can you imagine?
It was either 50 or 15. One of the two. Either way,
probably
it's 50. Crazy.
Probably 50. Probably 50. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
The Manning brothers, like Peyton Manning and Eli Manning as that group, all politicians, all like high-end people. So,
you know,
yeah, my knives are in that kitchen now, which is cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's the thing about that industry.
Yeah.
And I think it, I don't know. I've never been in the industry, but like I've known some people that are, and been close to some that are, eventually they kind of start to just take that for granted, I mean, not take it for granted, but just don't give a shit about it. You know what I mean? It's like, and it's kind of proof that a job's a job's a job's a job's a job. You know, it's like,
well, what's crazy is my brother was pretty much proving that point because he's like, oh yeah, you know, this person was in or that person was in is like, it was no big deal.
Yeah.
And it's totally like, you know, whether you're cooking for the queen or cooking for, you know, your next door neighbor, it's still the same process.
Right. They're all just going to shit it out anyway.
Right. But what's crazy about Nick, though, is he's been down in Nashville for less than 3 years. He started off in kind of a lower mid range. And within 3 years, he's now cooking at the best place in Tennessee, which is like, good damn, him, Nick, man. Look at you.
Which is crazy
because we're just little country boys. We're from the thumb of Michigan. We're nobodies. Like, what? Why is Nick able to get to that level so quickly? It's crazy.
Hard fucking work, man. That's
yeah,
what it
incredibly
is,
hard know? Work. But to finish up my week, on Tuesday night, I got my COVID shot, which was good to get out of the way. See, I'm really late to the party on that because I am a huge needle phobe.
No,
so like even seeing needles on TV freaks me all the way out. Like I can't watch it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But I finally, you know, basically manned up and went and got my shot. And then yesterday I was completely wiped out. So that's why I wasn't able to make it to the podcast.
No, that's real. I mean, and it's funny how it hits some and not others.
Oh my gosh.
Know, like my
see, I actually had, oh, sorry. Go ahead. Your wife was out.
Oh, go ahead. She was done just like you, but like 24 hours. And, you know,
it's exactly
right
the way it was with me.
Like a fucking boomerang.
Yeah, I had COVID quite like October or something.
That's right. I think. Yeah.
I was down for the count for about a week and then I wasn't really back to 100% until 2 weeks after. Yeah. Where this one, you get the shot and it's over in less than 24 hours for me. But
yeah. Yeah. Okay. So do you have to get another shot then?
No, I got the J&J one. So it's just one and done.
So single. Yep. That's cool.
my needle phobe ass. If I had to take a second, I don't know if I'd be able to get myself back in. I almost passed out on this one.
It's funny, man. How that, that's definitely real. And that, like my stepdad was always like deathly afraid of hospitals, not deathly afraid, but you know, just, and for him, it was always people in white coats, you know, like lab coats. And he would see that and just squirm.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom, this was, I don't know, 10 or so, maybe 15-ish years ago. I don't know. We were out west. My sister had been moved away as well. And my mom was in the hospital for something, and I can't remember what it was.
Okay.
I think my mom has fought breast cancer twice and kicked its ass. So
good for her. That's awesome.
Incredible.
Yeah.
My mom's my hero. But so he came in to visit. And of course, before he went up to town, you know, we're about 30 minutes out in the woods. And so you got to go to town to do anything, basically. But so, of course, he had to run home after work. Feed the dogs, feed the horses, do all the chores and everything else. And true to form, like every other day that he's been alive, he has 2 16-ounce straw beers from the hometown brewery, you know.
Hey, man, you got to do what you got to do.
Like nothing else. Well, he goes up to visit mom in the hospital and he's standing at the foot of her bed and a white lab coat walks in and he just faints like
a sack
of shit. Hits his head off the fucking foot of the bed, you know, and finds himself downstairs in the emergency room.
I was going to say,
question for how many beers did you drink?
to be fair, if you're going to pass out and hurt yourself, in the hospital is kind of the place to do it.
Pretty good place. But yeah, we still joke about that. You know,
oh, like, goodness.
You just had to drink those two beers. You probably had the third one on the dirt road going up to town too, didn't you? So yeah, it's pretty funny.
So Ben, what have you gotten done in this week?
Well, I finished a commission.
Hey! It feels
really good.
That's awesome. And what was that all about?
So that was the hickory countertop.
Nice.
That actually turned into a hickory countertop, plus wrapping a beam in hickory to make it look pretty, finish carpentry work. And then I wrapped the same kitchen peninsula / island that I put the countertop on. The guy actually wanted to just wrap it in MDF because he was going to do all kinds of trim work and everything else. And I'm like, hey.
And you're like, no, no, no.
I'm like, I actually did. I just wrapped it in MDF. And I think it should work out pretty dang well because he's going to break it up, and make like panels and stuff and all kinds of nickety knack trim work. It's probably going to look like hell by the time he's done with it, but hey, I'll take your money, Sonny.
Sure. It'll look like hell on his countertop and not yours.
Right. But I was going to do last night. I want everybody to know that last night, young Jason Hartwell and yours truly put in a valiant effort to get a Work For It show out on time, but we failed.
That is Jason from JK Blades. Just got Work For It podcast. Got to plug him in there,
Got to plug him in.
He put in the extra mile and it just didn't quite work out, but we definitely have to give him props for giving it a shot.
Hell yeah, man. And it was like total 11th hour Hail Mary. Hey, man, what are you doing in an hour and a half? I'll send you a link. Send him a link. But he's out there in the swamps of Georgia, I believe.
Yeah.
And his hillbilly ass couldn't get these Skinner nets to work. But we gotta have him on at some point.
Between your internet and his internet, I didn't think it quite had a chance.
I think I got mine flattened out. But I don't know. But anyway. Yeah, I don't know. But so anyway, Jason and I tried to put in a show. And then afterwards, I'm like, I got to do something. Like, I can stand in front of a mic and come up with a half an hour show at least.
Sure.
But there's that imposter syndrome coming in. And it's like, it's got to be good enough, right? It's got
to
be.
Right. God forbid if you guys ever leaned on me to try to do an episode by myself. Ooh, that'd be ugly.
I did one and it was kind of about tools, but what I was going to probably do, and then I fell the hell asleep on the couch with the phone in my hand. But what I was gonna talk about is learning to tell a customer no, right? Mm. Like we hear no a lot. As makers, if you're selling your work or if you're doing custom work, people say, if you're not hearing enough no's, then your price is too low. So if that's the case, maybe investigate your pricing strategy, because I think I would agree with that, right? If you're landing every single job, are the odds that you just found like the perfect sweet spot for their budget?
There's no way in hell.
Pocketbook and so jack them fucking prices up.
Oh my gosh. I can't tell you how many conversations I have with people on the internet of, oh wow, this is gorgeous, and go through the whole process of designing a knife, and then you land on the price and it's like, oh, maybe I'll have to save up, and then I never hear from them again.
Exactly.
I totally am on board with that idea.
And
for
you look
sure.
at their you look at their Facebook profile and there's some college student.
Right. Although
how much for this dining room table?
It's like, although when I did make
beer pong table?
For sure. When I did make my first Damascus knife, chef knife to sell it, I way under, like, I got it all designed and I shot him, you know, a price point that was way lower than it should have been. He was like, oh, wow, that's crazy. I would have never expected it to be that cheap. And then I had like that gut check of, damn it.
No doubt, man. Well, you know, I am fortunate in that I don't have to depend on that income, but that's still, I hear folks say that, and I want to always just say yes, but that's not a fucking excuse, right? And the reason I say it that way is because we're all in it together, right? At some level. And we've all seen whatever you're, if you're into knife making or you're into table making or cabinet making, I'll almost guarantee you, if you go into the Facebook marketplace right now, you'll find somebody in your local area selling it for probably less than you can get materials, right? And you go, how are they doing this? And why?
Well, I can tell you from the knife maker's perspective, a lot of those are ads from people who are actually shipping it in from like Pakistan or from wherever. Overseas, and they're buying it for crap, you know, prices because it's a crap product.
Especially with something that doesn't require that much material, right? Sure. Like a knife, you're not talking about a whole lot of material. You know, if you're talking about, say, a farmhouse table, you know, what I see, a lot of folks will go with Home Depot 2x4s or Home Depot 2x8s or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're undercutting. Now, I can argue both sides of this fence, right? Because I can also say that those are not my customers anyway.
For sure.
Because I you know, I am not going to make a table ever out of Home Depot lumber. Right. So that price point exists. And those people are filling that void. Great. But, so
like,
be it.
Like people have always said forever, you get what you paid for. Like if you paid $100 for a handmade knife, you're getting a really crappy, like, I'm not saying like there aren't people who make, you know, cheaper handmade knives out of, you know, more rustic. Like that's also a totally different bag. But you're not getting a Damascus knife for sub $100 or a whole set for a couple $100s. Like that's not a real thing. Right. Yeah, paint it on. Yeah. You'd be surprised. Like there's many horror stories of people ordering a cheap knife. And honestly, that is a YouTube video that I'm probably going to make at some point where I order like this, you know, buy this, you know, handmade, hand forged bullshit knife for, you know, $25.99. You finally get it here, and then I would make the exact same knife out of same material. Well, not the same materials, the good materials, the American made materials, and then do a stress test between the two. Like, oh wow, this one's not heat treated. Oh wow, this one is.
yeah. Well, and I've even seen people like playing around with, is it like they'll do an etching pattern or some, you know, different ways, laser on the Damascus look and just different, you know, smoke and mirrors tricks.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I feel like I can almost definitively say people selling, at least in this area, because we've got a pretty high number of sort of garage woodworkers in the Boise area right now. And it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
there's
for sure.
Explosions of growth, right? There are people coming in from, you know, California and North Carolina and all points in between. And there are a lot of desperate housewives. There are a lot of husbands with money who let them loose. And, you know, so they're out there to get the latest look, and they want to, oh, I'll support this look. Isn't it just so quaint? And it's nice to buy from that, you know, from this handmade man and all this shit. And it's like, but so those folks that are, you know, big flashing neon sign, $400 table. Yeah, it is impacting me. Certainly it is. You know, there's a trickle down to where if they come to me and I say, well, starting point is 1800,
right?
You know, for for all intents and purposes, what looks to them like the same product. Now I've at a minimum got an uphill battle to explain myself well enough to get them to that $1,800 level and then take them past that so I can start making money, you know? So
to be fair though, like that person was never going to buy from, like if they're looking for a $400 table, Walmart is still open. Like,
maybe not. But I think that the knowledge that it's there, right? The knowledge that, well, if they're making that table for that, could I go back to them and say, make it out of walnut? Now what's your price? And would it still be cheaper than Ben?
Sure. You know? No, it wouldn't.
There's that game, I think. And
Other way is it's mass produced and it's not really, you know, a homemaker or whatever else.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really kind of hard to tell, isn't it? It's interesting. But I think that there's room for every price point.
Absolutely, right? There is.
And I think that's the reality. In every market, the market will bear what the market will bear, right? And there's levels within that market. And once you work at finding it, I think it's good. And then to circle back around to telling your customers no, I think the other problem that we find ourselves into, and this may be more, no, I don't think it's more specific to like woodworking, because in making knives, you certainly also have like specialty requests, right?
Oh, yeah.
Do this one little tiny thing, and eventually you just get like nickeled and dimed to death, and you want it like, fuck no. I am not doing that. No.
I don't know if I've ever really had that issue so much. I have my base prices, and you know, if you want mono steel, it's this. If you want Damascus, it's this. If you want a wood hybrid, you get this. If you want just, you know, ironwood, it's like there's the base price is already there. And then if they ask for, you know, something embossed on the sheath, then that's pretty easy. There's so many different ways you can customize it that I've never really had a customer be like, you know, hey, if you could do this, but, you know, try to keep it cheaper by doing that. You know, luckily, I haven't had those customers yet.
Yeah. And it seems, too, that the processes involved in some of those customizations, they're not monumental, right? They're not they're not like 5-6 hours of work or anything like that.
Oh, for sure.
I'll give you the example that I ran into on this countertop beam and island job. So I wrapped this beam, right? And we wanted to match the countertop to the beam, so I used hickory for both. Hickory's a mother trucker to work with.
It just
fights you every step of the way.
Speaking of, I did one hickory handle. Or no, excuse me. I did one successfully, and the other one, the one I did right after that, which completely turned me off to hickory, I had finished a knife, I was grinding the handle, and I hit the grain in just the wrong angle, and it totally cracked on me. It was like all of that work, and I have to bust off the handle.
It kind of amazes me that it's like a fairly popular like axe and hatchet handle wood. It's hard as hell.
Right.
Right. It's dense, solid. It just has good hand feel.
Sure.
Like honestly, without even really putting any kind of oil or finish on it, it builds a patina really quickly just from, you know, touching it. But so we're wrapping the beam, and so it was almost 10 inches tall, this beam. So for starters, I couldn't get boards wide enough to cover that whole height. So we had to do two rows, right? So if you're looking at a beam that runs across the ceiling, I would have two rows of hickory boards there, you know, about 5 inches each. So the bottom part, I just made a U channel. And so that U channel, I could slide right over the beam, finish nail it in place. And then that was done. And then I just slap another row above that. Job's done, right? Mm-hmm. Not really a hugely difficult job. Built the U channel here in the shop. took it over to the site and slid it up in place, and not really any issues, except when I got it up there, hickory, in addition to being stringy, it's also, it has a lot of color variation. Okay. So you'll get really blonde parts right next to really dark parts in the same board, like, from the same tree. It's almost like a calico cat or something.
Yeah.
Well, I just so happened in my late night, God knows what, but I put a very, very light piece of hickory right next to a very, very dark piece of hickory. Mm. The span was long enough, so tall enough and long enough. I not only had to have that one horizontal seam, but on each row I needed one vertical seam as well.
Okay.
So it was almost like brick stack.
Sure.
Well, that small piece had to come out, and it had to come out of that U channel.
Mm.
And so I had to pull that whole
Sounds like a really easy down. Process there.
Oh, yeah. Pulled that whole motherfucker down and had to cut it out. I had to break it out of there. You know, like I used tight bond glue. And so it's like stuck like Chuck. So,
right.
So, and this guy's a pilot. So he's not, it was really convenient. It was a perfect setup. It's like 3 minutes from my house. The guy's a pilot. He leaves for 2-3 days. So I could go over there and work at his house in the air conditioning until 2 a.m. Nice. Instead of working in my shop until 2 a.m.
Yeah, man.
But I go over there, late night session, and pull the whole flipping thing down, get it all cleaned up, get the new piece put back in. Went over like 2 days later, slapped everything back up, the row above it, everything else, got it buttoned up. Did all the little wood filler touches and a couple coats of Total Boat makes a Halcyon Clear. It's a water-based poly, just an awesome finish. Put that on there. I mean, it was like looking downtown Charlie Brown.
Good.
And I'm all, you know, got a hard on, happy, and taking pictures and sending them to him. Yeah, you're flying around the world, man, but look at this magic shit that I just made, you know.
Sure.
And so I don't hear a word, and then 2 days later he gets
I was gonna
home.
Say there's he's a like, butt here somewhere. What's the twist? So
2 days later he gets home, he's like, dude, everything looks amazing, you know. And I'm reading, like, I see the message come in, he's like, look, this looks so fucking amazing, I really love it. He's like, Just two tiny little details, man. And he's like a younger guy. And he's like, just two little details, man. He's like, that beam wrap, it stops like 4.5 inches short of the wall. Like, I was really kind of hoping it would go all the way to the wall. And I'm like, oh, you fucking were you? It's like, okay, well. So, you know, I'm catching my breath like, can I... Like, he's like, do you maybe just have a couple little pieces you could slide in there and make it look real pretty? And I'm like, dude, are you kidding me? That's like putting a fucking trucker sized band-aid on a pimple on your fucking nose.
Right.
You know? Like, no way. That is going to stand out. So to appease him, because he wouldn't, just give it a try, man. If you don't mind, come on over. I'll write the check and come on over. Give it a try. Well, by the time I got over there, he was gone on another flight.
Of course.
And so I picked two of the ugliest pieces of hickory that I could find. And I fucking nailed them up there. And when I nailed them with my, I have a, like a little shitty cordless Ryobi brad nailer.
Okay.
When I nailed those things in there, that hickory was so fucking
it
hard
cracked.
That the nails stuck out about a half inch.
Okay.
And I just left them. And I just left them hanging out. Mm-hmm. And I took a picture and I was like, I don't know, dude. Looks like shit to me. You want me to pull it out or do you want to pull it out when you get home?
Oh, jeez.
Oh, so in the end, you know, I said, look, I'm sorry. Maybe I missed the detail. You know, and so I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. Maybe I missed a detail, but literally the only way to fix this, or the only way that I will put my name on a solution for this, is if I pull the whole thing down and I truly build the U channel and everything else to run all the way to the wall. So we minimize seams, We make it look clean. And mm-hmm. when somebody walks into your house and it's literally the first thing you see, you are proud to tell them, Ben Butler built that for me and here's his info, you know, and I'm proud to get the call. And I said, I'm not going to do it. I won't put my name on it. And I said, what I will do is I will give you 10% off right now to leave it as is. We'll pop the two pieces out of there. And I think it looks great, you know. And then I went one step further. I did a little surfing on the internet and I found some examples of beam wrappings that didn't go all the way to the wall, you know, mm-hmm. sent those over to him. I'm like, here's some examples. And it looks great. Honest, right. It looks perfectly fine the way it is. And so he happily obliged and I got the payment, you know, I think an hour later and everybody was happy. But I was so hesitant to put my foot down and say no.
Oh my goodness. That, and it's totally the same whole thing as when I had that customer. I finally remember I was telling you a couple months ago, basically I had a customer that
didn't pick it up.
So with that whole thing is she paid $50 less for the knife that I normally would charge everyone else. I didn't make her put 50% down like I normally asked, asked for. Literally it was just because I met her in person. We designed it in person. I got kind of a cool vibe, you know, hey, these are good people. They're local people. Hey, you know what? Screw it. Let's give them a little bit of a deal. Yeah. Yada, yada. That happens to everybody. Probably won't do that again. But I made this knife for her, and then basically, you know, there, of course, just like a handmade knife, there's little imperfections, and that's sure. part of it. That's part of a handmade thing. And like the biggest one was there the stamp. You know, I'm hot stamping my stamp in there, and it was just ever so slightly skewed. And I sent pictures.
And you probably admitted it.
Oh yeah, 100%. It's like, this is a pretty glaring imperfection. If you don't like it, please tell me now, and I'll remake your knife. And she didn't say anything.
Right.
So I figured we're all good. Yeah. So I drive it the half an hour to her to drop it off, and she takes it and she's looking at it. It's like, you know, the stamp is a little bit off. Is there any way you can remake it?
Oh, Jesus. Come on.
You know, so it's like, there's two different routes. I basically told her there's two different routes we can go. Either I can completely remake the knife, or I can grind it down and make the knife profile just a little bit thinner. It'll be a little bit more slicey. There's pros and cons to it. So she's like, yeah, go ahead and grind that down, and I'll just have to live with that.
Yeah. First of all, she knows custom knives, like she knows high quality kitchen knives well that she'll just deal with it.
Right. So I took it home that day, ground it down, got that all set up, and basically I'm taking videos, you know, like, hey, this is how it looks, you know, give me yes or no. And finally, after literally a month and a half of trying to contact her, I told her, hey, you're not liking it, apparently. I'm just going to go ahead and sell it. So it's up on my website. Yeah. So, yeah, well, it's just so crazy that people will have you do that much work. And then, you know,
I can't.
Luckily, this rap situation, he was cool enough to, you know, go through with it. Could you imagine if you had all that work put up there and like, I don't like it. Take it down or something.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, and I had been through that once, you know, like having to pull it down once to get rid of that really light piece. And I think it's just understanding those limits, right? Because pulling that down, I probably could have put my foot down right there, right? I probably should have, in hindsight, put my foot down a month earlier when we were selecting which species of wood to use. Because, like, in my heart of hearts, I knew damn well that he wasn't going to be madly in love with hickory. Yeah. I knew it, right? Like, because, you know, at best, sometimes all you've got is the internet as your communication tool. So I had sent him pictures of tables made out of like 6 or 8 different species of wood that I thought could come somewhere close to his price point. Okay. You know, right away, he wants walnut. And I'm like, walnut is going to be 3 times the price that I've already given you a ballpark on for starters, right? Like just for carrying the boards into my shop. It's three times the price. So that was out. And then it was kind of looking at, do we go cherry? Do we go hickory? Do we go maple and stain it? Do we, you know, all these options. And he sent me a picture back, copied one of the pictures I had sent, sent it back. And he goes, this is it. Hickory, motherfucker. And I'm like, dude, that's cherry. So it's like, we got a problem. So like, no, that's hickory, man. Hickory. I'm like, no, this one's hickory. So, you know, I sent him hickory back. He's like, oh, I like that even better. Fucking hickory, motherfucker. And I'm like, all right, well, you know, I did the whole mumbo jumbo. Like, I am telling you now, hickory has a ton of variation. It doesn't get any darker with age. It doesn't get any lighter with age. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. If you went with cherry, on the other hand, in 6 months, it'll be 3 to 5 shades darker than it is right now. And it'll age, you know, and really develop a really cool character over time. Right. And no, I like the hickory. He's like, could you just maybe like choose boards that are like darker? And I'm like, oh yeah, because there's just like thousands of fucking board feet of hickory just lying up around this motherfucker.
In the world shortage of wood. Oh, yeah, sure, gosh, I can go do that for you.
I'm just like, you know, but again, like learning to say no, right? What do you think my dumbass said?
Oh, well, yeah, I can do that.
I could certainly try. Sure. Absolutely. I'll give it my best shot. Right. So it's like, I think you, I don't know. You brought up Jeff Fader earlier, and just listening to some of his stories, I think we're all guilty of saying yes too much. But clearly, Jeff's been in the game a long time comparatively, right? And I think that it's one of those little hidden lessons that I don't know that you even realize that you're learning it, but I think we all kind of do the more you go.
And I think some of it is, you know, when you're first starting off, when you've only had 10 sales, it seems like, oh my God, that's all I'm ever going to have. I need to take every single thing that comes across my, my table. Yep. But when you're 10,000 sales in, you know, oh shoot, if I miss one, it's not a big deal. Yeah.
And there's also a difference between, those that make on spec and those that make custom, right? Like you have your line with your options,
sure.
Versus somebody like Mareko, who every single knife is bespoke, right?
Right, right.
It's an idea in the person's head when they walk in the door.
See, that's something I really need to nail down on my business, is whether I want to go the completely custom route or if I want to. Yeah. Make lines and just do a single type of thing, because right now, you know, I have my, you know, these are my ideal, this is what I'm basing prices off of for customs, these are the ones that I like making, but I also do love doing crazy off the wall customs, like I did that Sax knife in that YouTube video, and that was totally just somebody like, hey, could you make me a Viking knife? I'm like, well, shit, if your money's green, then I can do it. Sure.
Yeah.
And it totally came together. And now I already have another Viking knife sold because I put that video out and somebody else is like, damn, I want one of those.
Yeah.
So like,
but see, now you have the option to have a Viking knife on the books, right?
Sure.
Like you've got that, you know how it's made, and now you're refining the process. And I am more or less 100% custom.
Yeah.
I have never built the same thing twice.
See, that would scare me, because like if I'm going into a build where I've never built it before, like I have to sit and think about every single step, because like, oh, you know, if this one's completely different, I've never done this before.
That's every single
build.
Yep.
But once you've done it once, or like my grandma used to say, the first time you make something, you're going to spend all week making it perfect.
Yep.
And it's going to be great. The second one's going to take you a day. The third one's going to take you an hour. You know, I mean, that's exaggerated, but, after you've done it once, you become comfortable with it, so you can redo those processes. So, that would be scary for me.
right? Like, none of it's hard. You just don't know how to do it yet, mm-hmm. you know? And that's what I always tell myself. It's like, this shit isn't hard. You know, 98% of all woodworking, furniture making, and carpentry is building a box.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
If you can build a box, you can damn near figure out just about anything. Where I get the most skittish is if it's actually in someone's home, like doing a beam wrap or wrapping an island in MDF, you know, and in the back of my mind, I'm running through 1,000 scenarios going, what could happen? What could happen? What could happen? How could this fuck
what
me?
If this
How could
beam, this screw me? What if this beam yeah, falls right. down and breaks yeah. up can family heirloom? Like, oh my God.
Like, that's a lot of hickory to hang from the ceiling. Like, ooh, maybe I should put a screw in there. Nah, 16 brad nails, that'll hold it, you know? So those things, but you do, and I think that is something that I am always...
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Trying to improve that and speed up that sort of design phase. So one of the things that I've started doing is really involving the customer a lot. If they'll tolerate it, I'll have them over to the shop 3 weekends in a row, you know, where I've done some work in SketchUp. Or this fireplace cabinet that I'm building. I'm building a cabinet that will hold almost like a fireplace insert kind of thing.
Okay.
I think it's like an Amazon special that she bought, you know. But what I actually did before she came over, I had all my pieces cut. I had everything ready to go together, basically. Mm. And cabinetry is kind of like that. You make a bunch of sawdust, you've got all your pieces, and then you glue it all up, and then you're 80% done.
Right. And then just making it pretty.
Yeah. But before I actually glued it up, I took small pieces of wood, you know, like an inch by a half an inch, just little mock-up pieces. And I mocked the whole thing up. So I made a little small model of the cabinet just to make sure that we had every little detail that she wanted. You know, and we could hold it in our hands and point to it, had each piece lettered, you know, and in fact, an hour after she left, she texts me and she's like, piece D needs to go an inch this way so I can fit my speakers in that shelf or whatever the hell it was. I don't remember, wow. But it was just it was a tangible thing that she could hold, I could hold, we could look at. We could give it that final inspection,
right.
You know, and I had probably 70% of a set of plans done in sure. SketchUp and just kind of abandoned that.
Abandoned. You couldn't like just give it a little bit of a tweak.
No, because it's like cooking from a recipe, you know, I feel like my hands are tied or something or like I'm going to miss something that's so obvious because I'm too busy paying attention to the plan.
Okay. All right.
And I've never in my life built anything off of a plan. I've built a shitload of stuff off of a picture, you know, and that's how most things come into my shop is a link to restoration hardware, furniture, or, you know, something that somebody found. And then from there, I'll tweak and customize.
Sure, for sure.
I just can't do plans. I don't know. What I should probably do, though, is finish the damn plans and then sell the plans. But
hey, that would be a good little second source of income.
Yeah, I see that fairly regularly now where people are doing that. But anyway, I think it's fun to, I enjoy just thinking through that process of working with a customer on a custom build of anything. Because I think it's so dramatically different. Oh my gosh.
And then when you finish this custom piece and you finally reveal it to them, and it's like what they've been thinking about for, you know, sometimes years, most of the times months, and all of a sudden you can give it to them because you've made it into the real world. And just that, I mean, don't get me wrong. When you make something where, like, they already knew how it was going to look like in the end, it's pretty cool.
It's still cool. Yeah.
But, like, just to see that second level of giddy because it's like, oh, my God, this is exactly what I was thinking, you know.
I think that's part of my sort of involving them on the regular.
Yeah.
Right? Like I said, if they'll tolerate it, come on into the shop. You know?
My goodness. I love... just making little 1 minute videos. Hey, I just cut it out. This is what it looks like. This is my next process.
Yeah.
Hey, I just heat treated it. This is my next process. Hey, it's 80% done. Hey, look at this. It's get almost pretty, you know? And I think people just love that
shit. Your videos are great. Yeah. I really like those. Like you and Brian both are doing such a good job at sort of the shop update style. What I love about it, I think most, is that you've sort of flipped Instagram on its head, right? Because you guys are kind of doing what most people would do in stories. You're just doing it right on the feed.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, which is cool.
Well, I think one of the biggest reasons why I do that is like there are so many knife makers where if you go on the Instagram and look at their feed, it's literally just a wall of knives.
Yeah. Yeah, and it gets like product shot.
For sure. Well, I mean, that's good. I mean, obviously you want to show off what you can make, but I think the biggest thing for, you know, being a custom knife maker, or I mean, for you, for woodworking, if they're looking to spend that money, they could spend it at a couple hundred thousand different people. Like there's so many people out there.
Easily.
Why are they going to choose you? Like you have to tell your story, you know, your personality, draw them into you make them want to buy from you instead of, you know, Joe Blow, who's 100%. Selling almost the same thing at almost the same price.
That's the power of, to me, that is the power, the magnetic force behind all of the housework stuff that Brian does.
Yeah, for sure.
It is 3 minutes of a video and you have just been sold a ketchup popsicle and a set of white gloves, you know, and it's like, and you've got the gloves on and you're gnawing on the popsicle, you know, going, oh, I don't care that my gloves are red.
Right. But I do think that, you know, I do my best to try to get my face on screen and like my voice talking about what's going on as much as possible. Obviously, my face and my voice isn't nearly as pretty as Brian's or Brian House's.
No, but
you know, it's the idea of, you know, trying to, you know, get your face and your personality on feature and then your products, you know, I mean, obviously you want it up there, but, you know, product is almost secondary at that point.
Like it or not, you are your brand. I am my brand. We, you know, In this economy that we've built, you know, whether it's like the social media economy or it's just this little maker economy that we all have in our immediate area or some people that are selling online or whatever, that you're 100% right. You are the reason people are buying your shit.
For sure.
Because it doesn't matter what it is. It does not matter what it is. Somebody could find the same thing elsewhere in 10 seconds or less.
For sure.
You know, it's like there, I don't think there's any of us that may, that are that specialized, you know, unless it's like, I'm thinking of like this guy, Ramon Valdez, that makes this very specific domino dock jig.
Sure.
You know, that
right.
Nobody has the balls to copy him. So he's the only one going to make the domino dock.
Sure.
But you, yeah, your story, you and your face are the brand, and as I look back at my business and at my social media presence, that's a mistake that I started making very early on and never, you know, corrected course on. Is that I sort of went down a different path, which was, I'll help you figure out the process of making things, right? And so if you look, like, prime example, I wrapped the beam, I built an 8-foot by 4-foot countertop, and I wrapped an island in MDF, and no one has seen a single finished project
right.
shot.
That was actually something I
and you probably never will.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I was talking to Jason over at the JK Blades Hustle and Grind podcast. He was talking to me about, like, you know, he's been looking through your stuff and he never sees a finished product. How in the hell are you successful without showing, like, hey, this is a pretty shit I can make. Like, how you sell knives, is like, this is a pretty knife, I can make this, and then draw them in with your personality. But yet you're like, you're showing all these really cool shots, really cool short videos, but you never see, like, the gorgeous thing that you make.
Well, there's I think part of it is I found the ceiling for that, right? I've hit the ceiling. Whatever, I've got 13,000 social media Instagram followers. That's about as many other, you know, woodworking dweebs as you're going to find that want to know shortcuts and tips and tricks.
Sure.
Right? Like, I hit that ceiling. So part of why I'm not growing probably is because customers don't want to see that shit. You know,
so, I mean, I don't want to be the asshole who points it out, but is it time for a change? Like, is it time to start pivoting, start throwing in a finished product every, you know, 10 posts and then, you know, twice and then, you know, every other, and then just kind of switch it over so you can take those 13,000 followers. And of course, you're probably going to lose a couple of them, but you'll gain those paying customers.
Yeah. And I think that, if and when I start transitioning to where I'm more dependent on that income, for starters, that would be one thing for sure.
Yeah.
Is to start putting up more finished shots. I've seen folks that actually would use, you can bookmark your own posts.
And another thing I didn't know.
I'm trying to remember the process. It's been such a long time.
I think
I've seen where folks do that and make a catalog of all their stuff.
Yeah.
By bookmarking it and then sharing it. But anyway, a little bit of a diversion. Yes, 100%. That's a change that I would like to make, and not necessarily just for selling things, because, again, to me, at least for right now, that's not kind of neither here nor there. But I would like to broaden my audience more.
Sure.
Right. And what I think I miss the most about growing is the engagement.
Yeah.
Because when new people aren't discovering you, you don't get those random, holy shit, dude, you just blew my mind. You know?
Yeah, like, right.
Where somebody stumbles across your feed and they go, whoa, fuck me. Like, look at all this shit that you have.
See, I don't think that you should completely abandon those, you know, helpful videos.
No, I never
but
will.
I do think that you could probably do a 50% finished product or, you know, shop update and 50% of the stuff that you're really comfortable making now.
Yeah. When I happen to stack up a bunch of commissions. And I go in fits and starts with commissions too, right? Like,
oh my gosh, mine
is scary.
Myself,
like, we're out. I'll take six, and then I won't take six. I won't take another one for 6 months. You know.
Yeah.
But once I get, I've got the fireplace cabinet to finish. I got a set of cornhole boards going out tomorrow. And I've got the walnut river, epoxy river desktop, and then I'll be done.
Yeah.
And at the towards the tail end of that, number one, I'm going to be transitioning and cranking out some ShotBot CNC videos. And I've got, I don't know, I've got a dozen videos on a list, you know, that need to be made. And
I can think of one.
Yep. We'll get my face and my personality out there. And yeah, I'm looking to make a really strong push and run towards YouTube.
Yeah,
probably,
man,
in the next 30 days.
That'll be cool. Speaking of a YouTube video that you're trying to make, do you have any sort of update on the B-Cone/B-Butler shop knife you got going on?
I made the second pour. So it's been so buried in here with sawdust and projects that I didn't want to pour that dang thing another time. Because I was cutting all these cabinet parts and all this other horseshit, but I did pour it early this morning. Mm-hmm. And, I'm just feeling right now. It's kind of tacking up right now. So,
okay.
I think it's going to be cool.
Yeah,
I do. I think I'm going to like it. I wasn't sure, like I said before, but I think the levels to it, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So for folks that haven't seen it, I kind of took a block of walnut and more or less carved a wave into it.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like a wave. And then I carved a little pattern on part of that wave that would be like the tail end of the handle. And so my thought is that we'll have some clearish epoxy with a little swirl in it that you could look down into and see that pattern. And then it would fade up into wood at the end.
Yeah, man. So that's going to be a really cool design. I think it's going to look interesting because you're going to be able to look, see down into it and see all the holes I drilled for all of the, you know,
it depends on how I do it. So right now I've got it set up to where I could have a 1/4-inch thick scale on each side.
Okay.
You know, each side. And then that would mean that there would be a thin layer of walnut up against the blade or up against the handle. So I don't think it'll impact that, but I did set it up to where as you get closer to the end of the handle towards the blade, that Damascus will fade into the handle a little bit when you're looking down in.
That'll be cool.
It's got a lot of dimension.
Man.
And then I thought, the other thing, I didn't even think about this until I was a couple nights ago when I was looking at it and looking at it in the 3D software. And I was like, oh shit, I never thought about this, but you'll also be able to look in from the sides, you know, like if you're looking face on,
okay,
it's clear. But like the top of the handle and the bottom of the handle will also have clear spots you'll be able to see into as well.
Okay, that'll be cool. See, when I made this, you know, kind of Kiradashi woodworking, leatherworking knife for you, when I sent it off to you, obviously I made the YouTube video all around, you know, building it. And I've been, but when I sent it off to you, I figured you would just grab a couple hunks of wood out of the scrap pile, slap that on and just kind of, you've totally ran with this in such a cool direction. Like,
oh, thank you. See, but that's that. So here you go. Full circle to the beginning of the episode. That's the imposter syndrome that I fight, right? Because I think like, yes, that's what everybody would expect. So I've got to push it farther, right?
Oh, like, okay. Yeah.
Like in my head, I got to take it a step further, right? What is Jeff? Oh, you know, we're just all conceited bastards at heart, you know, and we always got to one up ourselves.
Of course. Well, that's how you get better though, isn't it?
It is. It is. Yeah. And you know, it's funny because, that what was it, last weekend or 2 weekends ago, when my buddy Tony came over with his son and we were pen turning and stuff. I was telling Tony and Andrew, I said, I've been trying to convince Jack for 2 years now to come on out here and we will start making pen blanks, turning blanks, and knife scales. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we've got all this wood, we've got all this epoxy, we've got all this other stuff. I was like, Jack, you could be making some bank, buddy. You know, all it takes is maybe an hour a week. You come out here, you pour some epoxy, you mess around, we'll put your shit up on Etsy, and I guarantee you we'd start selling custom knife scales and,
yeah, man,
pen turning blanks. But I don't know, an 11-year-old kid's not ready for the entrepreneurial, right, spirit.
And also, like, there are people, there are 11-year-old kids who totally are, but if you try, mm-hmm, to force that on them, it's just going to turn, yeah, them away even harder.
Not going to work.
Never going to, yep, work. All right, there's, so if I can take, yeah, feather out of Brian House's cap, let's change.
Dad joke time.
No, not dad joke time. We're an hour into this podcast, and I think, yeah, we need, man, to change gears and look at the WFI project on Instagram. So for those of you who don't know or just are tuning in, we every week see posts on hashtag WFI project. So if you guys go ahead and post on that throughout the week and give us little shop updates, just show us what you're working on. We will go through and look through and check those things out here on the show. What are you laughing about?
Or if you just want a convenient place to see all of Brian's posts, you can go there too.
Yeah.
He's tagging it. I think I'm tagging it. Yeah. We hosts should probably agree to not use it.
Yeah. I think we could use it as like just a, like, we're working on a project and show off what we're working, yeah, on, but like,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's funny.
Okay.
So do you want to grab one first or do you want me to?
I'm trying to get to the bottom of Brian's.
Here, I'll go first then.
Jamie the Squid.
Jamie the Squid. Sure. Go ahead.
Jamie the Squid says, a little more progress made on the Revolution Grinder.
Yeah, so he's, dude,
a revolution. I'm so intrigued about the revolution. I'm going to tell you this, and I've always been, but lately I've been like, man, Brian's right. I think 100% right that it is an incredible tool for a wood shop, for a metal shop, for a damn jewelry shop. I don't care.
Dude,
what
a 2x72 belt grinder is not just for knife makers.
No.
I'm telling you, as soon as I got one in my shop, obviously I use it primarily for, you know, grinding knives and whatnot, but there are so many little things that, like,
oh Lord.
Oh, like it's so incredibly useful.
I think
useful
about it and I'm like, man, I'm, you know, like in my head, I'm like, I've got the same, belt grinding machine that every woodworker or probably knife maker.
What is it, like 4x36 or something?
The Harbor Freight. Yeah, it's like the little Harbor Freight piece of shit thing, you know, that's like 4x30 or something, I think.
Sure.
And it's got the disc sander on the face of it.
Oh, you're, you know, talking about the little 1x30 belt
the green
grinders.
Yeah.
Ugh, yeah.
No, it's not 1x30,
but
it's
still
four.
Yeah,
but yeah, but anyway, and but then I, you know, I start looking at the Revolution or really any 2x72 and you go like, shit, man, I could put a disc sanding attachment on there. I could do like all these different
now
things.
Hold on here, yeah, for a second. We're on Brian House's, I mean, I guess it's all of our podcasts, but we got to up the revolution here. I mean, if you're looking, yeah, for one, go look at the Revolution for sure.
I'll tell you, I am kind of, you know, other than loving Brian to death, I'm indifferent about the design because I know nothing about it. Right. So, a Broadbeck versus a Revolution versus a Chinese, whatever.
Yeah,
I look at them and to me, they're, you know, it's like they all functionally do the same thing.
Okay, let me tell you where you're wrong.
Yeah. So, well, I guess my point is, what I think about where Brian's project is right now is that it has not stopped innovating.
Right. That's the big thing.
Since the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's not single point of focus innovation. either, right?
Right.
It's open source. And like I build software at work and, you know, have kind of, as I've gone on in my career, gotten more and more into sort of the software development world. And that's a, you know, open source software exists for a reason. Mm-hmm. And it's the groupthink mentality. It's you leave a breadcrumb, I leave a breadcrumb. Bob knows more than all three of us combined, and he leaves a whole loaf of bread.
Right.
You know, and Billy leaves mayonnaise, and next thing you know, you've got like the perfect sandwich. And I think that's what's really cool. Brian has managed to harness the power of the internet.
See, that's what I love about, obviously, the revolution. Also, I bought the Broadbeck. And that's another really small company. They're from Ohio, I believe. And, you know, they're totally, it seems like every 6 months or so, there's a new attachment. There's a new something that's come out that is completely, you know, upped a game or something. You can do something with it that you just will never see on another. When I said, you know, let me tell you where you're wrong, the Chinese companies or the really large companies that have been around for 30 years, they've already made their machine and it's not changing. And yes, it was a great machine 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's not 30 years ago.
Right. And they didn't, I think maybe, and maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is more of a question. It seems to me the focus of these new school projects like Broadbeck, like the Revolution, is on innovation.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
It is, let me see how many tricks this pony can do.
And right, there
from
are
the
a
beginning.
Lot.
And I think that when you are mass producing them, you know, in a factory in China, your goal is how many can we make in a day?
Right.
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 And so all of their innovation goes into the manufacture, assembly, and shipment of the product. So there's not as much room, potentially, there's not as much room for true innovation. You know, it's like Lego or, you know, some trailer hitches, and you want to make sure that it fits as many different vehicles as humanly possible before it goes out the door. And if you're manufacturing a bazillion of them a day, you say, I don't give a shit how many vehicles it fits. You know, they're selling, and we're not changing it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
You know, versus if you're a independent solo project, you can say, no. This is the thing about ours. It fits any fucking car.
Right.
Yeah.
So this was cool. One hell of a tangent we went on. So this Jamie the
Which
Squid
one?
Guy, we were talking about the WFI project. So that was all off of Jamie the Squid. There's a couple posts here. Uh-oh, I can hear your air compressor in the background.
Got it. Alexa, shut it off!
So Jamie the Squid has posted a couple of them. It looks like he's got a couple updates on building the revolution. But looking through his Instagram
setup, man.
Yeah, it looks like he's got quite a knife shop built up around him, and some Squid really gorgeous Forge. Knives to be posting.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all over the place. It's a lot of really cool shop updates and stuff like that.
Where's
just kinda,
he at? Do you know?
I'm trying to look through his thing, and I'm not really seeing a whole lot of information on it.
No,
but
that's a tip. I'll throw that out there right now. Guys, if you do not, at a minimum, have your actual name on your Instagram feed, put it on there now.
Now, on his Instagram feed, he has Jamie Blow as his
Jamie
name.
Blow.
I just have a feeling maybe that might not be his real name.
maybe not. But at least I've got a name I can call him.
Sure.
Right? So that's for starters.
Yeah.
And then I'm almost positive, I'm checking now, if you go in your profile, you get like this description that you can put underneath it too. Right? You get 3-4 lines.
Right.
And I say, put your location. I don't have my location in here. I'll have to put it in there. Well, I have it in my logo, so you can see it in my little thing.
Right.
But yeah, put your name in there. Put your location. I don't know. It's just always nice to know. Like, oh, gosh, I am so bad with names. But what's his name is just like up in northern Idaho. And I was chatting with him when I was first on the show. And I'm like, so where are you at? He's like, I'm up here in Northern Idaho. I'm like, no way.
Yeah.
You're just right up the fucking road.
That's so cool.
Yeah. But yeah, Jamie the Squid, check his stuff out.
Yeah, it's dude.
A cool little shop.
Looks like he's at 526 followers. So let's go ahead and jump that up real quick. So I'm going to, let's see if I can say this right. Because in his description, he says that his name rhymes with hawk, rock, and sock. So it's K Hawk, I'm imagining. Cutlery.
Or cock.
Yeah, you know, that might be it.
Cock. It's cock.
So cock cutlery.
The big hairy cock.
Cock underscore cutlery. K-H-A-A-C-K.
I think it is cock.
Well, we're going to call him cock cutlery then.
Caca.
So he put an update. It looks like he's working on the same batch of knives. It's an offset serrated knife, maybe like some sort of a Nikiri chopper situation, and then a paring knife.
That's a cool shape. I like
that. Yeah, that's a really cool
middle one.
That middle one's really cool. Often. I've never quite understood. I mean, obviously I've done offset serrated knives like for bread knives, but I've never understood like the why you would offset a chopper or something like that. Maybe it's for more height so that your knuckles don't rack on the whatever cutting board you're working on. But
could be.
That is just a really interesting blade shape. I really like that. It looks like he's, you know, getting more progress on that batch. Really cool. I mean, he's just doing a really great job.
Yeah.
Today I got, this is what he said under it. Today I got the blades ground and ready for hand sanding and handle scales cut. So he's making some good progress.
Oh, if you go into his
feed. Man, I'm telling you, he's at 46 followers. We need to at least double that. Come on.
Yeah, that needs to change.
I mean,
go into his feed. He's got a knife in a block with two other knives that's like this turquoisey pale blue. It's really cool.
Here, let me look.
I love that handle and color. Just jumps right out.
Oh, yeah. That is a really gorgeous one. And then, I mean, if you just kind of look through, there's so many posts from him that,
he's making a lot of knives.
Yeah, look at the one that it's kind of set up on a stand, and that's another offset, really interesting blade shape. He's a really creative, and it looks like a really, you know, really well done knife maker. Like he looks like he's been doing this for a long time, and with 46 followers, come on, we need to bump that up. So
I'm telling you,
let me plug him one more time. K-H-A-A-C-K underscore cutlery. Cock cutlery, you need to follow this guy. Or maybe it's K-Hawk, I don't know.
It's K-Hawk. Harry Keck.
Hey, man.
Harry. Last name, Keck. Well, Harry Keck reminded me of something, and he probably never will use the WFI project hashtag, but did you see Mr. Nick Tobin forging out some skulls the other day?
Yeah, I saw those posted all over the place. Holy cow, is that cool. That is another level of forging that maybe someday I'll get to, but probably not.
But you know, like I could visualize how those are made. That's one of the first things I think I've ever seen somebody forge, and I went, oh, I could figure that one out.
Yeah.
Because usually I'm so flipping lost with forging. They have a eye for geometry, but those skulls are really cool.
Well, I mean, think about it. All you're doing is just playing with Play-Doh.
Yeah.
Except it's really hot. It doesn't move. And you're using it with hammers. Yeah. Right. But one of the first things I did was start off with like the, what is it called? The modeling clay. Yeah. And instead of, you know, starting with steel and making expensive mistakes, I took this modeling clay and just kind of lightly tapped it until you make a knife-shaped object.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, you learn all of your, you know, big mistakes out of trying to figure that out. I mean, forging is literally just, you know, moving that material into the shape that you want. And,
it's being able to predict how much it's going to move and how quickly, I would imagine.
For sure.
It's tricky. And then I've seen some like Alex Steele stuff where they're thinking 3-4 moves ahead, and you're like,
well, that's what happens like when you literally masters. Are born with an anvil sitting next to you and a hammer in your hand. I mean, that kid has been going forever.
But I think we all have that unique skill or ability, or that's part of what interest brings you to the game. But what keeps you there is your ability to comprehend something pretty damn complex and pull it off consistently enough where you don't get frustrated with the process, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And it's like some guys in woodworking have a very good sense for cabinetry, and others have a really good sense for like an abstract charcuterie board shape.
Okay.
You know, it's just a big difference between that. I don't know if I could pinpoint mine. I'm not good at any of it.
All right.
Well, anyway, man, I'm going to pull the house on us, and we've been rolling for 120.
Dude, I have one what more. Else do we have? I've got one last big thing. One big announcement.
What's up?
Today.
Whoa, bring it on us.
Today, about 5 hours ago, I put in my 2 weeks notice at Target. I am done with that place.
Yeah, bitches.
2 weeks.
See you fucking later.
I am out of there.
So you're going to start a landscaping business? I just got a new weed whacker.
Well, yeah, let's go. Let's do. No. So, you know, obviously I'm moving about an hour away. So, I mean, that's the biggest reason, but.
So you're going for it.
Yeah, I'm going for it. I'll probably end up getting some sort of like a part-time job to, you know, have a little bit of income to help with the transition. Sure. But my goal is to basically go full time and try to make this.
That's awesome.
Try to make this knife making business a real thing. But
what percentage, of it do you see? If you had a crystal ball, what percentage would you like to see of like, purely just hammering out, banging out knives versus some of the social media stuff trickling in as well? See, like if you could make some cash out of some social media stuff,
see,
where would you
thing.
Like it to fall?
Here's the thing. I've never made money off of social media. So at this point, my thought process is social media is just free advertisement. So I'm going with it with the mindset of I'm 100% making money from my knives. Anything that comes in through social media is a bonus, which it's going to be a long time out before. I mean, at least from my mindset here, that's not even an issue for me. But
yeah, I think it's an interesting thought. And I think I would encourage anybody to at least consider or at least factor it in a little bit because I didn't, right? And so what I found, I've also never made a penny off of social media. I've gotten a good number of tools that way. So technically, you know, not all money's green.
Sure.
But I know other folks who focused solely on monetizing it as quickly as they can. And not just by like, I'm monetized on YouTube. You know, finding ways to get paid to do it.
Right.
I think is an important distinction to make in your mind.
And the thing with that I'm thinking is like social media, just think about all of the different algorithms that have to line up for you to do well. You know, if you can get some sort of a paid partnership or, you know, some sort of a sponsor, that would totally, you know, kind of take that, you know, algorithm worry out of it. But
I see it though, maybe a little bit different. And I guess if I were to quit my job tomorrow and woodwork full time, what I would see is that I could now reliably tap into the algorithm killer. And the algorithm killer is that I could be perfectly consistent with my social media.
Yeah.
Right? Which is, at the end of the day, essentially all the damn thing wants.
Right. Consistency.
You know?
See, that's one of the things. That's one of the things that I'm imagining. Once I can put in, you know, my full-time focus on my business, Just think, like, right now I'm getting, you know, hey, I'll have a day off once a week or maybe 2 days off in a week. Just imagine if I had 7 days a week to dedicate to it, how much content, how many knives I could kick out. Like, there's,
'cause at the end of the day, you're doing five times more of the work that you would be sharing.
Right.
For starters, right? And yeah, your ability to easily create content and flip it out there is so great, right? Peter McKinnon.
Oh my gosh, I love him. Holy cow.
So Peter just did a video on the 12th, so 2-3 days ago, where it's called A New Era of Making Videos Online. And he talks about, and we've talked about this on the podcast, I know Brian and I for sure, and you and I to an extent, the difference between the highly polished advertisement style video and the run and gun, shaky video, but you know, you're getting a lot of it out there. Right. And he actually does, it's this quirky coffee maker thing.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I watched that video and it's totally,
he shares two videos.
I mean, one is like, you would imagine this is this coffee maker, you know, they put on this whole production company.
Yeah.
It's so polished. The lighting's perfect. The sound's perfect.
Like Peter McKinnon,
and then the other one is something you'd see off of TikTok where you filmed it on your phone. Yep. And literally the end, he did a thumbs up at the end, like, you know, kind of like a goofy.
But you know what, what I liked about his point that he made is that most people, I feel like, are saying, oh, you got to move towards this style or move towards that style, or everything's changing now and all Instagram wants is blah, 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 blah.
Sure.
Instead, he said, how freaking awesome is this, right? I can create either or both.
Right.
And I can put this one there and that one there and the other one over there. And I know that TikTok wants just the shoot from the hip, so I'll throw this quickly up there. And I'm going to make a sexy, flashy YouTube thing. So that's going to go there, you know. And so I just thought, I almost literally just watched it before we jumped on here. And it just, like, it just hit me, like, finally, he's not bitching about the algorithm changing. Right.
Instead of saying, woe is me, the algorithm is screwing me over, it's how can I screw the algorithm? Like, what can I do to play it instead of having it play me?
Yeah, and he's got it boiled down to black and white, two styles. And I think he hasn't necessarily done that per se. Some things have happened recently with these platforms. The head honcho for Instagram, actually, if you go to his, I can't remember his name, but if you go to his feed on Instagram, he openly talks about, you know, he basically does everything but come right out and say, we are trying to beat TikTok right now. You know, he's just so very clearly like,
right,
shoot from the hip. We want fast videos, you know, so he gives some pretty good insight. You know, he starts out by saying that Instagram is no longer a photo sharing app.
What?
Yep.
Obviously, I missed this.
Literally his words. I'll try to grab the link and we'll put it in the podcast notes.
To be fair, I mean, that's kind of how I've been doing it.
It's a video sharing.
Solidly 80% of my feed is, you know, little shop updates, me talking about, I mean, they're all videos. And then, I mean, that's kind of my style anyway. So maybe I'll be blowing up here soon.
I'm telling you, I think. I hope I'm right. I believe that you will see a pretty sizable uptick in your follower count. You know, if you make the decision that it's meaningful enough for you to do it more regularly, almost daily kind of a thing. Heck, when I string together three daily posts in a row, I notice an uptick.
Yeah, for sure.
It's almost literally that reliable of a metric.
See, that's one of the things that I struggle with the most is, you know, most of the times I have these orders and I have a relative, sometimes I have a, you know, I need to have it done by this day, or, you know, hey, it's been X amount of weeks and I need to finish it. So I just get my head buried in finishing it. And then I come up for air and realize, oh my God, there were like 10 posts I could have made in that mix.
I know process. I do that too. Yeah. Like, why didn't I pull my damn camera out?
Right. You know? And it only takes, you know, 5 minutes to think about what you're going to say, film it real quick, put it up, have a caption, and you're back to work.
And don't overthink it. You know, don't overthink it. That's the big, big, big thing.
Right.
And also, and this is probably, I'll end with this thought, is that your audience does not have to know that your feed is a week behind where you are in real life. And it also doesn't fucking matter if you do stories and people could realize that from watching your stories. Right. Like if you're posting about a project you finished 2 weeks ago and in your stories, you've already moved on to a whole other project. That's OK.
And another thing, hey, you have a finished product that you're really happy with from a year ago. Repost it.
Pull that baby out. Right. Hells yeah, man. I talked about that on our live on Saturday about digging that shit out of the graveyard, man. Mm-hmm. I was looking on Instagram. I currently have 835 posts.
Oh my God, where am I at? Let's see.
I could literally start, right? I could start at the beginning and have over 2 years worth of content.
You have 835, and how many years have you been doing it?
Oh gosh, three or four, I think. I don't know, because Instagram almost makes it hard to go to the beginning of your feed now.
Right, but you roughly, let's say 4 years. I'm roughly two years and I'm at 185, so your clip is a lot more quicker than mine.
Yeah, I was doing two a days there for a while.
That's the thing that I really need to buckle down on, especially when I make the switch, is posting every day, and if I can, multiple times.
I think, and like I said, it doesn't have to be polished, it doesn't have to be pretty, it doesn't have to be anything.
Right.
You know, some of the shit that I look at that blew up and got over 100,000 views, they are the dumbest damn things sometimes. Man,
see, that's the thing that I'm learning with TikTok, is like, it's the thing that you think is going to flop that ends up hitting hard. And the things that you put in a bunch of time and thinking out and making it perfect,
it'll flop
like a fish.
Yep.
Oh my God.
It's dead in the water. The second you squeeze the trigger, man, it's done. And see, that's the problem, I think. And that, because you'll find yourself in this weird place, like Peter McKinnon talks about, between polished videos and real videos. Mm-hmm. And then you find yourself debating that. And then, like, I spend more time editing posts now than I ever have. Yeah. You know, for a while, I didn't even have an editing software. I literally shot it and posted it, right?
But if we're going back to the conversation we started with, or about maybe midway through, you know, it's the people are buying from you for your personality. They're looking for a window into your shop to see who you are, what you're doing, how it's made. They're not looking for the commercial you'd see on TV. They're looking for being a fly on your shoulder to see what you're working on. So I
the lady with this, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with, you know, the less polished, the better. Obviously, make your product as polished as possible, but, you know, try to make your post and your updates as real as possible.
Yeah. And I think you'll find that to be sustainable. And some people really enjoy the editing process. I don't think either is wrong. I think the biggest thing, like you say, is to be as real as possible and make sure it's sustainable.
Right.
Because otherwise you will burn out, you know, like a ball of fire. All right. So February 26, 2018, on that date, I posted my first Instagram post. It was a image of my then logo with my name spelled BenaJamin, Butler Company. Benjamin. It was literally a year, just over a year, until somebody asked me about it.
Oh, that's goodness. Brilliant. Well, okay, shit, man. Brother. Well, I was gonna say they're gonna start thinking they're listening to like Joe Rogan or something, because we're
right.
We came in here thinking it's gonna be like a quick half hour episode, and we're an hour and a half in. So
she came in through the window.
Yeah, dude.
Told you that. The butler's taking over the house, so we're gonna shut up now and get back to cleaning this fucking shitter.
There we go.
All right. Well, dude, this was fun.
So much fun. I loved this.
It. It's a great, great way to spend an afternoon. I don't know when exactly we'll flop this guy out there, but we'll work with Brion Housewort and get it edited however we need to and flop it on up there.
Yeah,
and
dude.
Maybe we'll still make a Thursday delivery, but
we'll do our best.
I hope everybody out there has an incredible day, whatever day it is that this gets out there. Remember, if you would care to, we do have a Patreon page, and that's patreon.com/workforit. You can go there. You can find Brion House at house_work on Instagram. You can find Mr. Brion Cone at b.coneknives.
K-O-H-N, right? Remember.
Yeah, b.coneknives.
Yes, sir.
And you can find yours truly at Benjamin Butler Company on Instagram as well. We appreciate everybody's support.
Yeah, man.
Another quick shout out to Jason for holding down the fort with me last night and trying to beat the gators off the internet pipes and get shit figured out. We'll get our poop in a group and get him on here. But
yeah, man, really appreciate it, man. For sure.
And everybody have a good day and a good night.
All right, guys. All right, Brion. Have a good one. See you guys later.
Don't let your meat loaf.
All right, see you guys.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Oh.
All right.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.